From Illinois Public Radio, this is a news special, Redistricting in Illinois. Illinois is one big state, but look closer and you'll see it's actually made up of districts for Congress, the State House and Senate, even courts. The carving up of Illinois falls to political leaders and it dictates who has the power and who makes decisions that guide the state. Despite calls for reform, Illinois continues to use a system that gives an edge to those in control of it.
These maps are drawn solely for the Democrats who maintain their political power in the state of Illinois.
In order for us to have an independent commission, we needed to have a constitutional amendment, something that would actually change the way the process operates today in the Constitution. That did not happen.
It's a once-a-decade political process. We'll break it down on this IPR special, Redistricting in Illinois. Stay with us. Welcome to an Illinois Public Radio special, Redistricting in Illinois. I'm Sean Crawford. Every 10 years, the political boundaries in the state are redrawn based on population changes and minority voting rights. But Illinois' system winds up giving one party a big political edge, and the impact is enormous. It can dictate who represents you in Congress, the Illinois State House, and other offices. Still, most voters see it as an arcane exercise. This hour, we'll try to explain the ramifications of redistricting and how the latest maps could impact some areas. Well, first up, let's talk with someone who covered redistricting closely this spring. Hannah Meisel is our State House editor. So, Hannah, what role did the pandemic play in drawing new political boundaries?
Well, like everything else, COVID kind of pushed deadlines and made certain things impossible. Usually, the U.S. Census Bureau would get states the information they need for redistricting by April of a redistricting year. Like everything else, that was pushed, and we won't actually see that data until mid-August.
So the Democrats who control the Illinois General Assembly and are drawing these new maps, they could have waited, but they also had a deadline they were trying to meet, and explain more of what that's about.
People have called it a deadline. They've just called it a suggestion. But either way, in the state constitution, there is this June 30th date. And if lawmakers and the governor do not approve new legislative maps by June 30th, it gets taken out of lawmakers' hands and goes to this appointed bipartisan commission, which almost every single time it's been used has deadlocked. And, you know, of the times it's deadlocked, a name gets pulled out of a hat or a crystal bowl, as it were, one year. Democrats this year control the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, much as they did 10 years ago. And they don't want to risk giving Republicans, that map-making power. And so they wanted to make that June 30th deadline to avoid that outcome.
Meanwhile, Republicans have already filed a lawsuit over these maps. What are they saying about them?
That's right. Republicans and the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, MALDEF, this group that fights for Latino rights, they've both filed lawsuits. And, you know, what I think is interesting here is these community advocacy groups have had begged Democrats not to go ahead with redistricting without proper census data, saying, you know, we're afraid that we're going to be undercounted. And, you know, all of these community groups, there's a lot at stake for them. They want to be able to be represented in the legislature and in Congress. And they want further to be able to at least have the chance to elect someone who looks like them. And Republicans have glommed onto those arguments. And, some folks thought that that was disingenuous, but either way, both of them fought like hell over the spring to say, no, please don't do this. And then of course their legal recourse is to file suit in federal court. They may also file suit in some state courts. It'll be very interesting to see whether the federal judges agree that using the American Community Survey data, which is a little outdated, whether that violates folks' voting rights.
Well, that's what's happening this year with redistricting, but there's always this issue and discussion around this process that it can be done better. We can take the politics out of redistricting. The governor had sort of indicated he was in favor of that when he was running for office, but he went ahead and signed these maps into law Republicans have said he broke a campaign pledge. Did he do that?
Short answer is yes. The governor, while he was running for governor in 2018, he was asked point blank, would he pledge to veto any legislative maps that are drawn by political staff or legislative staff or any, you know, emissaries thereof? And he said yes. And then he went further than, you know, his fellow candidates. And he said, you know what? This should go to an independent commission with or without a constitutional amendment to legalize that commission, which, of course, had been tried in both 2014 and 2016. In 2016, the state Supreme Court struck that down and said, no, we can't have that on the ballot. It doesn't meet the constitutional requirements. It's a story for another day. But, you know, he was very adamant that either way, there should be an independent commission. And then after getting elected to office, I think he realized the political realities. He basically reversed course. And of course, he signed those maps.
Just a few seconds left here, but the congressional maps, when is it likely we're going to see those?
Well, ironically, I think that Democrats are waiting for census data to actually draw those. The Constitution only mandates that it's the legislative maps that are subject to that June 30th, again, you know, whether you want to call it a deadline. So it could be, you know, late August or September or possibly further.
That's Hannah Meisel. She's our State House editor. And thanks again, Hannah.
Thank you, Sean.
Now let's check in with WSIU News Director Jennifer Fuller and find out how redistricting is playing out in Southern Illinois. Jennifer, what has the reaction been?
Well, for the most part, it's what you might expect. Since all of the representation in Southern Illinois is Republican, it's been very much a question of whether or not this should be a partisan issue or whether an independent commission or even a, you know, some sort of computer system should draw the maps. In this region, there are no maps drawn where people would specifically have to run against each other. But the map is very different when it comes to the representation. For example, Franklin County, the way things have been drawn, would have three representatives in the Illinois House.
So the maps are changing, but it's not expected to change the representation as far as which party is in control.
More than likely, no. There is some speculation that one of the districts may have been drawn to favor Democrats over Republicans.
What are you seeing in terms of plans for the upcoming election next year when these maps would be in place?
We haven't heard a lot from any of the incumbents about whether or not they intend to run. And I think that many of them are still taking a closer look at the actual geography of the district they might represent. The map changed dramatically from the 58th and 59th state Senate districts running vertically, north and south, to horizontally, east and west. So there's a big change when it comes to the geography of where these people represent. We do see one challenger already in the what will be the 117th State House District, which is currently represented by Dave Severin of Benton. He lives in a newer district now. So there's someone from Metropolis, Representative Patrick Windhorse, who would live within the new 117th that could potentially run. We have a challenger from Ron Ellis, who is a former county board chair in Williamson County that has already announced his candidacy for that seat. You know, we're still a big question mark about who's going to run, where will they run. The other thing that's unique, I think, to this area is that three of the four state representatives right now in this region are freshmen. One of the two state senators is a freshman. Terry Bryant has been in the Illinois House for some time, but this was her first term in the Illinois Senate. That also, perhaps, we think could have something to do with how things change down here.
That's Jennifer Fuller, news director of WSIU Carbondale. Jennifer also spoke with John Jackson. He's with the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. And Jackson has followed redistricting for decades. Here's their conversation.
John, we spend a lot of time talking about redistricting every 10 years or so. How would you compare 2021 to 2011 or even 2001?
Redistricting is always big. It's always complicated because the stakes are big and the process is complicated, particularly because of the Illinois Constitution, which spells it out in minute detail. It always leads to partisan fighting, which it did this year and did in 2000 and did in 2010 and all the way back to 1970. So those are just the givens. This one is as partisan and as intense as ever, but the add-on here is the unsettled nature of which census data to use, and because the federal census data are not ready and won't be ready until way past our deadlines in the Illinois Constitution, we're going to have to do that one last. And so the State General Assembly said, we're going to go ahead and act. We're going to follow the Illinois Constitution. The deadline's 30th of June. We're going to meet that deadline. They did. Governor Pritzker signed it, so we got a law. Now, there will be all kinds of court cases filed, one already in federal court, others will be filed in state court. That would mean going to the Illinois Supreme Court. All of that has happened in the past, and all of that will happen this year. And it's separate this year because the federal process is on a different track. And so when that settles, there will be other cases filed. So this one is as intense and complicated and even more complicated than ever.
You and the Simon Institute did some polling over the last several years of Illinoisans in terms of whether they would want an independent commission to draw new legislative maps rather than to have this be such a partisan issue. There was huge amounts of support for independent commissions, but yet it still remains a political process. What do you think the hang-up there is?
Well, you're exactly right. I think we did that question 5 years in a row, and every year it came back 66 to 70, 71, 72 approved of independent commissions drawing the maps. There are a number of states that have changed to that, Arizona, California, being a couple that have changed fairly recently. It's extremely popular. It's a reform that has always polled very, very well. The reason it's not likely to change here and in many of the other states is the legislatures want to keep control of that map making, and we're not unique in that. Most states are not different from us on that. And short of a popular referendum, I don't think it will change in Illinois anytime soon.
You mentioned the courts earlier. This was another change in terms of the redistricting process this year, in that the Illinois Supreme Court districts were redrawn this year. And a lot of people were saying it was so that one particular party, the Democratic Party, could remain in control even with legal challenges. Do you see that as the same reason?
Well, it hasn't been done since 1965, so they've been clearly out of the purview of one person, one vote. The suburban districts in Chicago were overwhelmed by the downstate districts. Downstate had about a 2-to-1 population margin. So under all of the U.S. Supreme Court case law, starting with Baker versus Carr, which is way back 1965, we've been out of compliance. So laying aside the partisanship, it's way past time to get that done. I think it's, however, precipitated by the Thomas Kilbride case. What they've done is to give more representation to the suburbs around Chicago, not really to Chicago's central city, but the suburban equation makes it now possible for the Democrats to at least have a competitive district there in what was the Kilbride area. I think that's why they did it. I don't think they necessarily created an absolutely safe, it looks to me like a competitive district is what came of it.
As we sit here, we say that the legislative work is done, but we know that's almost never the case. John Jackson with the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, there are plenty of lawmakers who have strong opinions about redistricting, but what about residents? Lawmakers made efforts to gather feedback earlier this year from the public, and Yvonne Booz with WNIJ has more from one of those hearings.
It was one of the first in-person public events held in over a year at Aurora City Hall. In April, Mayor Richard Irvin welcomed those massed and gathered to learn more and share what they really think about how Illinois draws legislative maps.
Thank you very much for allowing me to speak with you for a few minutes about the Illinois House of District. You know, this is a very important process, part of our electoral process to ensure that we have equity across the board in our communities, in the state of Illinois and in the city of Aurora.
It was one of nearly two dozen similar public hearings held across the state. Liliana Oleo testified. She has lived in Aurora for the past 20 years.
A lot of the community doesn't feel represented well. I'm kind of a little bit nervous. It's the first time I'm doing this. I'm being kind of excited too.
You're doing a great job.
She pointed out to the fact that the meeting itself didn't have an interpreter for those who don't speak English. And she added, the formal setting can scare people off.
I'm very trying to make the point. You don't see that many Latinos in these kind of meetings. It's not because we don't care.
Democratic State Representative Barbara Hernandez helped host the meeting.
It's great to listen to organizations, to the people, of what they're asking for. And they're asking for representation for the minority community.
Jason Hudson also came out to the hearing. He said he was curious if lawmakers would really use input from residents.
And then using that information to go ahead and really draw a map that the public wants. Because keep in mind, these representatives are servants of the people. We elect them, we pay tax dollars to them, we pay their salaries, we pay their pensions.
Republican Representative Tim Butler of Springfield shared that population estimates aren't enough to capture the state's changing demographics.
The best data available is going to come out in August or September. That's the data that we always use to draw our maps. If we draw maps before that, it is going to underrepresent minority population. It's going to underrepresent rural population.
Recently, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund filed a lawsuit on behalf of several individuals of Hispanic heritage. The group alleges use of American Community Survey estimates violates the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. They're calling on the General Assembly to redraw lines for next year's elections once complete census data becomes available. I'm Yvonne Booz.
You're listening to our special Redistricting in Illinois. There is more to come. Stay with us. This is an Illinois Public Radio special, Redistricting in Illinois. We're examining how the process works and its implications. While lawmakers squabbled over changes in state legislative districts, they've held off on drawing the state's new congressional district map. But preliminary census figures make one thing certain. Illinois will have one fewer congressional district than before, 17 instead of 18. And with Democrats in control of redistricting, Illinois' five congressional Republicans are vulnerable. Illinois Newsroom's Jim Meadows spoke with a GOP strategist, Patrick Fingston, about how those Republicans might fare under a new map drawn by Democrats.
And the political reality is that Democrats aren't going to willingly give up one of their own members. Democrats will draw as many safe Democrat districts as possible. And it's also likely you'll see Democrats will try to punish some of those existing Republican members of Congress. They can dismantle a district like they could do to Adam Kinzinger. They could pair two or even three downstate members into primaries. In fact, you can draw a map where you do put three into one district, though that's a little less likely to pass court muster.
Well, what can Republicans do in next year's campaign season to try to minimize the damage or perhaps even try to gain a seat?
What will Republicans do and what should Republicans do are vastly different questions in today's Republican Party. In 2020, the Republican Party could have nominated more mainstream candidates in the 15th, 14th, and 6th districts. Instead, they nominated far more right-wing candidates. So you get Mary Miller voting with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz in that 15th district, and you had candidates nominated who couldn't win in the suburbs.
And here we have to mention that you worked in the campaign of one of Mary Miller's primary opponents 2 years ago, Darren Duncan.
I did, and my opinion would be the same had I not worked on that race.
If Mary Miller were to suddenly call you and say, Patrick, I need you on my reelection campaign, what's your advice for her?
Miller is likely to find herself in a Republican primary, whether it's against Mike Bost from Murfreesboro or Rodney Davis from Taylorville, who I've also worked for in the past, in some sort of a new district in 2022. The reality is Davis and Bost have a better fundraising track record than Miller does. But if you draw them into a district where they're not as well known and Miller can run to the extreme right and push up the Trump Tea Party Freedom Caucus crowd, she could win a race, even a primary, depending how they draw, whether it would be the 15th or a new district to impact her.
I think the only incumbent we haven't touched on yet is Darren LaHood. What do you think he has to look out for?
Darren LaHood could be drawn into a district with another Republican like Rodney Davis, most likely. If LaHood would want to avoid a member versus member primary or would not want to run in a heavily Democratic district, there's been discussion, though he hasn't confirmed publicly, that he would consider a race for Illinois Supreme Court. That gets more complicated because the new Supreme Court districts that were drawn by Democrats last month put LaHood in a new Supreme Court district that includes Peoria, Bloomington, Springfield, the Quad Cities, and Rockford. So you have to use a lot of new territory in what would be a new district and definitely a complicated district as well. And the political part of going from Congress to the Supreme Court would also be interesting, to say the least.
Besides Darren LaHood, who else among these five Republican incumbents in Congress might be looking at running for a different office as an alternative?
I'll give you two. Rodney Davis can run for governor. He can raise money. He's won in a difficult district, a split 50-50 district, and he's likable enough guy that he may not scare away some of the suburban women that you need to win that other Republicans would potentially scare away. And then there's Adam Kinzinger, who could run for Senate. While he said he's going to run for re-election to the House, he lives near Joliet, so his district could be completely dismantled, completely spread among Democrats. While he's not particularly popular among Republicans for some of his anti-Trumpian stances, it would be a positive for him potentially in a general election. He would be the most high-profile candidate to take on Tammy Duckworth next year.
Well, with Democrats drawing this congressional map to be in play for the next decade, and with the number of districts going down by 1 to 17, is there anybody else besides the incumbents who might try a run for Congress, any newcomers that might run for Congress in Illinois who are Republican?
I think you should keep an eye on Tom Demmer from the Dixon area. He's a state representative and has his sights set on a potential run for Congress or statewide. There's Mike Marin from Vermilion County who almost ran for Congress in 2020, though chose not to. And then there's kind of a gaggle of Republicans in the Springfield area who are either being drawn out of districts or potentially have some other aspirations, depending on what the districts look like.
That's GOP strategist Patrick Pfingsten talking with Illinois Newsroom's Jim Meadows. Pfingsten has worked on the congressional campaigns of Republicans Rodney Davis and Darren Duncan, and also publishes a political newsletter, The Illinois. We're talking about redistricting in Illinois and checking in throughout the state. Next, we turn to the Chicago area. Tony Arnold is a reporter who covers government and politics for WBEZ, and he joins us now. Tony, give us an overview of the new map that lawmakers approved and how it treats House and Senate districts in the Chicago area.
It's looking like the Democrats, I should say, took a lens of looking at the Chicago area and the suburbs of making sure that the minority groups had representation in Springfield, specifically at the legislative maps. What you have is about a net equal number of seats that are meant to be Latino districts, maybe a seat or two less of African-American or Black districts. Democrats say this is making sure that we're meeting our constitutional obligations of the Voting Rights Act and making sure that people who have been disenfranchised in the past have representation in Springfield. On the other side of that coin is the Republicans, who say that these are gerrymandered districts drawn to elect Democrats to Springfield and therefore keep Republicans in the minority, or as it has been the last few years, super minority in Springfield. They didn't please every community group. There are plenty of those who say Latinos should have had more representation. Maybe there should be a Muslim district as well, is another complaint that the Black population in Chicago particularly has gone down. So are they getting the representation they should be getting? These are all issues that have come up since the maps have been released.
One of the groups that has already sued is the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund. They're making that claim as well, that despite these efforts that Democrats have made to ensure minority representation in the Illinois House and Senate, that it should be higher?
That's right. And the Latino population in Illinois has been growing, if not holding steady. And so the issue there is, if they're making a greater part of the population, then why not have more Latino representation?
Going back just, a few decades ago, it was definitely a split between Democrats having a lot of control in Chicago itself, and then you turn to the suburbs, and that's where Republican dominance started to come in. That's not the same anymore, though.
It's not the same, and it's not unique to Illinois either, particularly when you look at the presidential elections. Look at the suburbs around other metropolitan areas and in the country, and you're seeing that they turned Democratic. Now, I think Republicans would probably take issue with me saying that and say, if we didn't have Democrats drawing those lines, we would have Republicans representing the suburbs. But I think that particularly looking at the 2020 election, that doesn't totally hold water, because Trump did not fare that well in the suburbs of many major cities around the country. That said, the suburbs around Chicago, and just looking at those, they have been going more Democratic. And even some long-held Republican districts flipped and are now Democratic. And on the counter side of that, you're seeing downstate, where Democrats used to be able to elect politicians, they're now struggling. And Republican, the downstate rural parts of the state that used to be Democratic or very union-heavy are now very Republican areas, deep Republican areas. And so there's been this whole change of mindset here, and as the suburbs have changed and people have shifted where they moved over the last decade or two, where the suburbs that used to be very Republican heavy are now Democratic, and that's all part of what you're seeing reflected in these maps as well, and how these are being split up to potentially elect more Democrats.
And of course, we're talking about the Illinois House and Senate, but we have not yet seen a map for Congress. That's expected to come later in the year. Is it likely that we're going to see the Republicans lose some power in Congress, at least when it comes to the Chicago region, the suburban areas?
I can only presume that that will be the case, because it's Democrats in Illinois who are in power and who have the authority or who have the power to draw these maps right now. Illinois is likely losing a seat in Congress because population has slightly declined. So what that means is when they're drawing bigger districts because we're losing one, then somewhere along the lines, someone's going to lose a seat when you take stock of the current members of Congress. So is that going to be a Democrat who's either around Chicago or the suburbs, or even, along the western border of Illinois? Or is that going to be making those Republican downstate areas even larger, to the point where you potentially have two incumbent Republicans duking it out in a primary? The other thing I'd say is that it's notable that the Democrats did not draw the congressional districts when they drew the district's boundaries for the state legislature or the state Supreme Court. In that case, they're saying that they're up against the constitutional deadline here to draw these districts. Well, the fact of the matter is that they used estimated census data to draw the districts here for the Springfield representation for the Supreme Court. And they're going to hold out and use the more accurate census numbers once those come out for Congress. And that potentially would make it harder to sue for anyone to sue over the congressional maps, whatever those end up looking like.
That's Tony Arnold. He's a reporter with WBEZ in Chicago. And Tony, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean.
With much of the attention statewide on how population and politics play into legislative representation, county boards face similar dynamics in drawing boundaries. Eric Stock with WGLT looks at the effort in McLean County to depoliticize the process, especially in a part of the state with a strong urban-rural divide.
McLean County government redraws its county board districts every 10 years after each census. Typically, county redistricting draws little attention, but this year's redistricting process has turned into a fierce political battle. It has pitted Republicans against Democrats and rural residents against city dwellers. How the new political maps are drawn could impact whether Republicans will hold on to a slim majority on the county board over the next decade. A McLean County Board Committee held several public hearings on redistricting. The discussion centered on whether the county should keep its current format of 10 districts and two board members in each district. County Board Member Elizabeth Johnston, a Democrat, proposed the county move to a 20-district format. That would mean one board member for each district. Johnston argued residents would have better representation if their one county board member had a smaller district.
In Shenoa, their closest board member is 30 miles away. That's almost the distance from my house to Lake Morton. We're a big county, and I would like to see us make sure that we have representation for each community in our county.
That idea got lots of pushback from rural residents.
She has no problem passing the laws and forcing citizens in those large swaths of county lands to abide by her wishes, but she clearly doesn't want any of those citizens to have any say whatsoever in whether she is reelected.
I get to vote for one of you every 2 years as opposed to every 4 years.
If you were to expand the number of districts and representatives, it will result and voters like me having less representation.
But the rhetoric was fierce in the other direction, too. Some rejected calls for fewer districts. For example, in a 5-district format, each voter could elect 20% of the board.
It would potentially dilute the diversity of perspective and lived experience that are represented.
Larger districts will not be compact and certainly unable to fulfill the requirement to keep communities of interest together.
Simply put, regardless of intent, the impact of your plan is racist.
The debate largely formed along political lines. More county board districts could help Democrats by spreading out the urban and more Democratic-leaning population into more seats. Democrats say this would also help more minority candidates get elected. The county has one non-white board member out of 20. Residents from rural and conservative-leaning areas argue more districts would make it easier for the board to cut services outside of Bloomington-Normal, where they say residents rely more on county services, including the sheriff's office for police protection and the highway department for road work. The Democrats' proposal for 20 districts was scrapped after the county's assistant state's attorney, Christopher Spanos, told the committee the county could not move to a one board member per district format without a public referendum.
Make no mistake, a 20 single member district plan passed by the McLean County Board would be unconstitutional.
And the Republicans' plan to reduce the number of districts also lost steam. GOP County Board Member Josh Barnett claimed some in his party were working behind the scenes to create maps that would shut out Democrats.
They're trying to dump Republican voters from the rural areas into Bloomington-Normal in an attempt to keep control of the county board for the next decade. And they're not being open about that. They're not being honest about it. And it's time that it stopped and is brought to light.
The county board ultimately agreed to keep its 10-district format with two members in each district, but the maps still have to be drawn. County Board Chair John McIntyre created 3 advisory panels made up of 24 community members to craft 3 map proposals. McIntyre says the goal was to keep the politicians from selecting their voters.
The map drawing process committee, ad hoc committee, will be working exclusively on their own. There won't be anybody, including me, involved in this.
But the county board will still have final say. The board plans to select a new map this fall. I'm Eric Stock.
I'm I'm Sean Crawford, and our special Redistricting in Illinois continues. Stay with us. You're listening to an Illinois Public Radio special, Redistricting in Illinois. I'm Sean Crawford. Well, you've heard it often from candidates running for office. We're going to make our schools better. We need to improve education for our kids. But what happens once they get elected? Peter Medlin with WNIJ talked with school leaders about how representation affects the classroom.
Jody Moore is in charge of a very small school district, Leland, and all 261 of their students. She also maneuvers a complex web of elected officials from the local level all the way up through state and federal government. It can be challenging for rural schools of Leland's size to catch the ear of a lawmaker. So Moore says the superintendents in her region have learned to combine their voices.
Those lawmakers have a group that they can question, that they can check facts, that they can ask really, how is this affecting you on the ground level, and not expect one single answer because we have such a diverse county, but to get some different scenarios and some different feedback.
Coincidentally, they also have a group called Voice that informs local school leaders on the latest in Springfield and what it could mean for their students. And since not everyone goes to the legislator with an educator's perspective, Moore says sometimes they have to teach. A few years ago, she met with a new representative for hours to break down how school funding actually works.
I explained, like, where our money actually come from and what special ed expenses are and what an outside placement costs and what the reimbursement rate is. And, you know, he's like, I would never know any of this.
On the opposite end of the spectrum, Aaron Jarrett is the superintendent of Rockford Public Schools, one of the largest districts in Illinois. He says they meet with their state representatives and senators twice a year, one during the legislative session and once after. Jarrett says it helps that their current representative, Maurice West, went to RPS, and both he and State Senator Steve Stottleman sit on education committees.
And really, there are two types of legislative conversations we have. One is proactive, pushing for improved policies and procedures, but a lot of what we do is very reactive.
That typically means offering input on bills or so-called unfunded mandates. Jarrett says cultivating these direct relationships pays off. District leaders work with Senator Stottleman to help with a plan that changed how Illinois handles Title I funding for schools with higher percentages of low-income students.
With Senator Stottleman's leadership and also support from Senator Steverson and some of our other local officials, we were able to get that passed. That has literally meant millions of dollars of efficiency to the Rockford Public Schools with the same dollars.
His main objective is fighting for what Rockford students need, but he also has to acknowledge political realities and think broadly about education statewide. Right now, RPS is working with elected officials to give lower-income schools funding priority for facilities projects. But even though they're the third largest school district in the state, they don't interface a ton with federal lawmakers.
We had a little bit more involvement with federal officials, particularly Representative Bustos this year, in talking about COVID relief funding and some of the policies associated with that.
Forestville School District Superintendent Sherry Smith's Northern Illinois district is small, and her area's education leaders have also consolidated their voices to have a say in Springfield. She says unfunded mandates are a topic that comes up a lot with lawmakers, and she says mandates can often stretch her limited staff and budget pretty thin.
You want a new implementation of curriculum. That's great as long as you have the people to do it. And, you know, if that's going to require a new person or a new program or a new textbook adoption, then obviously that comes with money.
The other key issue is funding. Leland's Jody Moore says this year with COVID, there was some anxiety that the $350 million of state education evidence-based funding wouldn't come through, which lawmakers did eventually approve, but it made many in education look back at the budget crisis.
I think a lot of us were nervous because we know that's happened before when the state doesn't have the money.
Although COVID has not meant more federal attention for schools like Leland and Forestville, it has allowed more engagement locally. Moore and her group of school leaders feel heard enough to email their state representative to talk about inconsistent school guidance on COVID testing and reporting.
I happen to know Tom Demmer has a health administration background, and so that's who I would send stuff to, like, hey, this is how this is impacting our families, and then that's how it's impacting attendance here at school.
And Moore's learned that even if it's more difficult for her small school to get in touch with state legislators, putting an education issue within their context is helpful for them to understand it.
Sometimes I think it's easier to wrap a person's mind around it when you're looking at a small district because everything is so apparent. Here's our budget. This goes here. This goes here. This is what happens when we don't get this. It's a small voice, but it's a very clear voice and a very clear way to look at an issue when you see how it plays out in a small district.
The remapping process could mark the end of some of these relationships districts formed with lawmakers over the past decade. And the homework assignment now for school leaders is to prepare to build new bonds with politicians who will represent their students and staff for years to come. I'm Peter Mudlin.
Last year, University of Illinois professor Brian Gaines did a survey on what the public wants from redistricting.
The justification for redistricting is the district ought to be very close to equal in population. So that's one pretty much accepted by everybody, but that's what redistricting means. You make equally sized districts. So I asked them about some other criteria. The district should take simple shapes. They should follow existing county and city lines. They should result in the parties getting about the same proportion of seats in the legislature as they have a vote share, make sure there's a proportionate number of African-American representatives to the population or Hispanic representatives to the Hispanic population. Towns and neighborhoods that have a lot in common should be put in the same district as much as possible. There was really some support for all of those ideas, but the one that got the most support was the overall percentage of seats won by each major party should be about the same as its percentage of the total vote. And they're suspicious of maps that can turn a 50-50 state into a 75-25 legislature where one party is getting a lot more bang for its buck.
That's U of I professor Brian Gaines. His survey on redistricting also asked the best way to go about drawing political maps, and the most popular choice was a nonpartisan commission. Well, if you want to find a reapportionment process completely opposite to Illinois, you only have to cross the Mississippi River to Iowa. Not only is it far different from Illinois, but it's pretty much one of a kind among the 50 states. Herb Trix has more.
Following some rulings on redistricting by the Iowa Supreme Court following the 1970 census, the current system first took effect in Iowa in 1981, and it boils down to a nonpartisan staff drawing lines with a nonpartisan approach. The Iowa Legislative Services Agency is a nonpartisan provider of support for the state legislature, and that includes drawing new congressional and legislative districts every 10 years. Senior legal counsel Ed Cook says there are two key components.
One of which is that we should not use any political information in drawing proposed plans. The other aspect of Iowa's process is the actual process and who draws the lines, how is this dealt with in the legislature. And so the system has the Legislative Services Agency develop a proposed congressional and legislative plan for consideration by the legislature.
So basically what matters, and pretty much the only thing, is where people live.
The legislature on the first plan can either accept or reject that plan in total. It goes to a second plan under the same process. And then if it goes to a third plan, the legislature then at that point can amend the plan and adopt a modified plan.
They start with congressional districts, and like every other state, the goal is to make the populations as equal as possible.
The key factor for congressional redistricting in Iowa is that the Constitution provides that counties shall not be split in forming congressional district. And unlike most states, Iowa's counties are small enough that you can combine the 99 counties in a way that gets the deviations extremely close to zero.
And then comes Iowa's legislative districts.
Legislative redistricting, there are standards that are established in the statute. The most restrictive standard is that no district shall vary by more than 1% from the ideal population. And if they do exceed that tolerance, then the burden is on the General Assembly to justify that difference.
Cook says the key concept here is nesting. There are two state House districts in each state Senate district, and their goal here is to keep these whole within Iowa's four congressional districts. One other difference from Illinois is minorities, or the relative lack of them in Iowa.
But the key is, can you create a sufficiently compact district with a majority of, you know, kind of a voting age majority of a minority population? And you just can't do that in Iowa. There's not sufficient numbers of the minority population, and they're not sufficiently compact enough where you can create a district.
He says really the only difference between now and when this process began in Iowa in 1981 is better software, because he knows of no efforts now or in the past to change it.
As far as I know,
there's no interest in trying to alter that process.
Ross Wilburn is chair of the Iowa Democratic Party and a state representative. He calls the Iowa process a model that makes Iowa special.
It's designed to be nonpartisan, it's designed to be based on population and in line, in accord with one person, one vote, that the people are electing and selecting their representatives, not elected individuals choosing who gets to vote for them.
Unlike Illinois Democrats who've already approved a map, Iowa must wait until official census numbers are released, and that's scheduled now for mid-August. And that means there'll be just a couple of weeks for the whole process to draw new maps, hold public hearings, and hold votes by the legislature. Because state law requires the Iowa Supreme Court to take charge if the new maps are not finished by September 1st. So Ed Cook believes ultimately the state Supreme Court will have to make a lot of very important decisions. I'm Herb Trix.
So Illinois Democrats have pushed through new state legislative maps for the upcoming decade. That's to the chagrin of Republicans who wanted a commission process giving them a louder voice. But as WCBU's Tim Shelley found out in his conversation with the National Conference of State Legislatures, Wendy Underhill, Illinois is not a national outlier.
Illinois is very much at the front edge of the wave of states doing redistricting. Most states are waiting until August, September, into the fall, even the beginning of the 2022 sessions to do redistricting. And each state makes its decision about when to do it based on what's in their state constitution primarily. This year, because the data from the census is being delayed, that's why some states are a little behind. But Illinois had a particular situation with its constitution, and therefore it went earlier with a different set of data than some of the other states are waiting for.
I believe that was the American Community Survey data, which some have said is perhaps less reliable than the official census data?
Well, I think this year is such an unusual one because last year was such an unusual one because of COVID. So everything that we've known to be the way it's done, standard operating procedure, is under question, and states are figuring out what they need to do. I did say Illinois is at the front end, but it's not at the very first. Oklahoma has also had maps drawn and passed in a similar kind of a way. But I mostly am seeing states are holding off on it until just a little bit down the path.
One thing is that Illinois does have kind of a political process. If you could talk a little bit about how Illinois' system maybe compares to some others that have gone to the independent commission format that some other states have decided to shift to.
The normal process is for legislatures to do redistricting in the way that Illinois does it. So Illinois is with the bulk of states in doing it in the legislature. And then sure enough, who is in control of the House, who is in control of the Senate, who is in control of the governor, those all matter a great deal in that universe. And you're right that there are states that are moving towards systems that are based on commissions doing the work instead of the legislature, but each one has its own flavor. And to use the word independent or nonpartisan usually doesn't work for these commissions because there's some tie back into the legislature or some amount of politics built into it. And I'm not in any way saying that these systems aren't good systems. I'm just saying there's 50 ways to get the project done. Try to say that any of them have no politics would be a bit of a stretch. Some of these commissions use members who are appointed by legislative leaders. That's a pretty common system, mostly in the 80s and 90s, systems of that nature were developed either. So that's pretty normal, and depending on what that tie-breaking vote looks like, it either builds in bipartisanship, or you could still end up with a situation where the dominant party dominates redistricting as well. More modern ones have tried to build in all kinds of Rube Goldberg-like approaches to ensuring the independence of the members. We don't have a lot of data on how well one system works as compared to another. At the moment, if you lump all legislatures who do redistricting and all commissions that do redistricting, and you compare how they did in the courts, whether the courts approved their maps or not, they work out about the same, maybe the legislature having a slight edge. So I'm not sure that tells the whole story about it, but it does say that it's very hard to take this complex topic that overlays data with politics, with people, and tries to envision things for the next 10 years, it's pretty complex to get those maps to be so that they meet everybody's needs. And maybe at the end of the day, if nobody's quite happy with the maps, that might be an indicator that you were somehow down the middle.
Tim Shelley talking with Wendy Underhill. She's with the National Conference of State Legislatures and serves as its Director of Elections and Redistricting. Thanks for joining us for our special on redistricting in Illinois. It's an arcane political exercise, but one that matters when it comes to political power. It will dictate who makes the important decisions in government over the next decade. We hope you have a better understanding of how it may impact you. I'm Sean Crawford. Our program was produced by NPR Illinois with help from other Illinois Public Radio stations.